So once upon a time, 1,000 years before Jesus was born, before there were kings of Israel and the land was ruled by a group called the Judges, in that time there was a famine in the land. And that famine moved Naomi and her husband Elimelech and her two sons to move about 50 miles east and south to a sometimes hostile land called Moab. They were vulnerable refugees, of course, having to leave their family, their systems of support, and to go to this potentially hostile place. To make matters worse, sometime after arriving there, Elimelech, the father and husband, died, leaving Naomi and her two sons. But there was good news, too, because her two sons had found two Moabite women named Orpah and Ruth, and they married and began to settle in their own families. Now, it was 10 years after they had settled in the land of Moab that more bad news came. And Naomi's sons died too. And with that, Naomi was completely emptied. Emptied of her husband, emptied of her sons, emptied of her land, emptied of her family. And now even Moab was experiencing famine. And she was emptied even of food. She had heard, though, that there was food back in Bethlehem, which means house of food. Where there had been no food in that house, there was food again. So she decided to take her two daughters-in-law and to move back home. Somewhere along the way, though, she realizes that her emptiness has given her nothing left to give her daughters-in-law. So even though she was empty, so that they might hold the chance of being refilled, she sends them away, commands them to go back to their families, to find other husbands and to start their lives anew. Orpah reluctantly goes back home, but Ruth's not having it. She digs in her heels. "I'm not doing it," she says. "Where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God." It is a pivotal moment in this story and for the life of the world. You see, because in this difficult moment, where it would have been very easy for Ruth to go back home, she shows loyalty, she shows grit, and even more, she shows something in Hebrew that's called hesed, loving kindness. It's the thing that God shows to us in loving us. God shows it to us, showed it to Ruth, and now Ruth shows loving kindness in this most difficult moment to her mother-in-law, Naomi. And in the face of loving kindness, Naomi can't say no. And she allows Ruth to follow her back home to Bethlehem. Still, though, Naomi is empty. She is sad, she is angry, and did you catch that she changed her very name from Pleasant Naomi to Mara, which means bitter? And so it was that the loving kind Ruth and the now bitter Naomi arrived back in the house of food just in time for the barley harvest. Chapter 2. They are back in the house of food. The problem is that their house doesn't have food. So Ruth decides to go into the fields to see what food she can glean. And maybe it's chance, maybe it's God's hand, but Ruth finds her way to the field of a man named Boaz, who was a distant relative of Naomi by marriage. So Ruth's out there gleaning in the hot fields, and Boaz comes in and sees Naomi and finds out who she is, finds out that she is a distant relative, but also that she's a foreigner, an alien, an outsider, a refugee, an other. And in that moment, he could have rejected her. He could have thrown her out. He could have taken advantage of her in some way. But you know, Boaz didn't do that. But what he did do was he welcomed her. In that pivotal moment, the second pivotal moment of the story, Boaz calls her in, welcomes her, tells her that she can glean in his field. He tells the men to leave her alone, and he tells her that whenever she's thirsty, she can go get a drink of water. It's not what she expected. How did I find favor with you? She said, I thought you were going to throw me out. I thought you were going to throw me out on my ear or worse, but how did I find favor with you? And Boaz says this, I have heard of the loving kindness you showed Naomi, and now I want to be God's agent and show that same loving kindness to you. Hesed begets hesed. Loving kindness ripples out and multiplies and becomes contagious and begins to move outward and more strongly into the world. So Ruth goes home that night and she tells Naomi what's happened. She tells Naomi about the loving kindness of Boaz, and for the first time in a very long time, Naomi starts to feel a little bit of hope and joy and get a sparkle in her eye. She starts to feel just a little full again. And we see in the story how the loving kindness of God becomes loving kindness in Ruth, becomes loving kindness in Boaz, and is starting to become life again, even in the bitter Naomi. It's a cool story. And we are just halfway through the story, but we can already tell that it's a sweet one, can't we? It starts with the once upon a time. It moves forward through the tragedies of famine and death. It teaches a lesson about being kind to one another. And there are some seeds, aren't they, that might just turn into a happily ever after. We don't know how the story's going to end, but already we can tell it's a sweet story, maybe even a fairy tale. But there's a lot of sweet stories in this world, aren't there? There's a sweet story written every minute of every day somewhere in this world, I'm sure. And if Ruth was merely a sweet story, we wouldn't still be talking about it. If it was just one sweet story among a whole bunch of other sweet stories, we would have forgotten it a long time ago. But as much as Ruth is a sweet story, it also has an edge. It's got teeth. It has challenging questions to ask of us if we're willing to risk it. So what do you think? Even though it's hot, should we risk the challenging questions of Ruth this morning? I think we can do it. I think we've got courage and strength together as a congregation. Let's do it. Let's risk some challenging questions. And the first question that we'll risk together is this. With the emptiness in your life and in my life and in our life, do those places of emptiness, do they consume you and overwhelm us and make us blind to the loving kindness that God and God's people are showing to you all of the time? You see, Naomi, she's got real suffering and real pain. I mean, this is real stuff that's happening to her. She's hungry, her sons die, her husbands die. This is hard stuff. And we can relate to it, right? Because everybody in this room has pain and suffering and hard places and places where we just feel empty. And it makes us want to change our name from bitter to, or from pleasant to bitter. And it makes us sometimes miss the Ruths in our life that are cleaving to us and clinging to us and trying their best to fill us. We miss that. I'm not going to speak for you. I'll speak for me. And more often than I am comfortable admitting, I focus on what's wrong, what's broken, what's out of place, the unjust, right? The hopeless places and the hopeless things I feel, I succumb to bitterness and anger and sadness and sometimes even despair, and I miss all of the abundant blessings and grace of God and God's people that are around me all of the time. So my answer to the question of do I let the emptiness in my life overwhelm me and do I make me blind to the loving kindness? My answer is yes. But what's your answer? Challenging question one from a sweet story. There's another one though. The second challenging question is this. do we meet the refugees, the immigrants, the strangers, the other, with loving kindness, or do we meet them with rejection of one kind or another? Which is a hot question to be thinking about in the current political climate that we're in right now. For the last few weeks, all eyes have been on the southern border, and rightly they should have been. The political winds have shifted. The rhetoric of fear is amping up, and children are being separated from their families, families being just broken in so many ways, the vulnerable made to feel more vulnerable, and hundreds of rallies that our youth group was part of yesterday on Church Street saying, you know what? This isn't okay. We need to find another way. I know we don't all agree about immigration and refugees in this country. I know, too, that there are more complexities on our southern border than we can comfortably talk about from Sunday morning pulpits. But I know, too, the Bible. I've read it a lot. And I know that has a whole lot to say about how we as people of faith are to welcome immigrants, refugees, outsiders, alien, and the other. And I know too that what's happening on their southern border isn't just happening on the southern border. It's happening out there and right in here, and it is happening most importantly right here. That we too, me and you and all of us, right? We don't always meet outsiders and others with loving kindness. We have words that we use like tourist, flatlander, right? And if I can say the word masshole, sometimes we say that, right? I lived in Massachusetts for 12 years, but you've heard the word before. We find ways to divide, to separate, to put ourselves above people by education level, by economics, by skin color, by sexuality, and about a million other things, right? But we look at the story of Ruth that shows the loving kindness of Boaz, who met the lowly Moabite woman not with rejection, but with loving kindness, to the point that we're still talking about that amazing moment today. So, the hard and challenging question, how do we meet the outsider, the immigrant, the refugee? Which is a challenging question from such a sweet story. Third question. Ruth challenges us with this. What does Ruth challenge us with? Let me look. I tried so hard to remember. Oh, yeah, of course. This is the hardest one of all. Do we believe that small acts of loving kindness from ordinary people just like ourselves, do we believe that that has the power to bring real life to real people? Right? That may seem like the easier of the three questions, but I think that that's the hardest question by far of the three, and maybe of all. You see, a central claim in the story of Ruth is that small acts of loving kindness ripple outward to bring life to Naomi. And I'm not going to tip my hand too much, but as we see chapter 3 and chapter 4 next week, we will see even more how this rippling action of loving kindness ripples out to bring life to the whole world with a tie in with Jesus Christ. So, as I ended my our Bible study about Ruth this past Monday, I said that hesed, loving kindness, ordinary acts of kindness by people just like us, that is Harry Potter's wand. That is Luke Skywalker's Jedi powers. That is a filibuster-proof voting block. That hesed, acts of kindness done by people just like you and me, that holds the power within it to change systems, to topple corruption, to become refuge for the refugee, food for the hungry, and housing for the homeless. As my friend Roger Gillum says, he says that the story of Ruth is not about good people doing good things. It's about ordinary people becoming extraordinary through Hesed and through Hesed's widening circles. So that's what Roger says, and that's what Ruth is trying to teach us. But the question for you and me and all of us is, do we really believe that small acts of loving kindness hold the power within them to bring life where life is needed most? And if we do believe it, do we then take the next step, have the courage, the strength, the connection needed to have those acts of loving kindness be just part of who we are? Do we live out our beliefs with the actions of our real lives? Challenging questions from such a sweet story. But let's put a pin in it for now and let those challenging questions sink in just a little bit. Next week we will continue, we will finish up Ruth and look at chapter 3 and 4, and I promise you that there will be sweetness next week, but also a whole lot of challenge too. So come back, bring a friend, we'll study together in Christ's name and for the life of the whole world. Amen.